asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances.
So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com, designed for work.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp's software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. Ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Currents issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing freelancing your way to freedom with Vincent Puglisi.
Yeah, Joel, Vincent, he's a husband, a dad, and a professional photographer who started out making just $15 an hour working for the local newspaper, all the way to paying off $140,000 in debt over 4 years. Through his journey to becoming debt-free, he discovered the power of being self-employed and the impact that it can have towards not only achieving financial freedom, but time freedom as well. During the process, Vincent wrote the book Freelance to Freedom, which has inspired many who want to quit their day job and start their own business to take control of their lives. I've read this entire book. It's incredibly motivating and practical as well. So, man, because of that, I am really excited for our conversation today. So, Vincent, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, guys. This is so much fun. I'm excited to be here, and thanks for having me.
Oh, of course, Vincent. Yeah, we're really excited to chat with you. And every week on the show, Matt and I, we have a craft beer. And today on the show, we're drinking a beer called S'mores Yeti by Great Divide. So it's a stout that tastes like s'mores. So it's going to be pretty tasty. Looking forward to having this one.
I need one.
All right, we'll send you one. But basically, Vincent, it's an effort to prioritize things that we really care about right now, while we're also trying to be really intentional about saving for the future. And so I want to ask you, kind of, what's your splurge? What's your craft beer equivalent?
It's a little more expensive. Probably it's traveling.
Okay,
that is my splurge. And I think people think we're crazy. We have 3 kids and married, but traveling, seeing different places, going on the road for a while, that's where my fun money goes for the most part.
Very cool. So you are actually on the road currently, right? You wanna share with our listeners where you are?
Yeah, right now we're in St. Augustine, Florida. It's bright and sunny. We live in Pittsburgh during the regular part of the year, but every year we leave for about 3 months, 3 to 4 months as a family. We homeschool and we just hit the road and we explore different parts of the country and eventually the world with them. So the last 2 years we went out west. This year we're doing a southeast tour of here and the beaches of Alabama and then to Hilton Head. And we'll be back once the sun starts shining in Pennsylvania again.
Yeah, and homeschooling, man, that allows you to hit up different parts of the country, different parts of the world at whatever time you want, which means you're able to plan your travels according to the price and not just the time you have available, right?
The price and the crowds. So we when everybody else vacations, we stay home and then we wait until everybody goes back to school. And then we go, okay, the world is ours again. Let's go.
Nice.
You know, September is great. The winter, we go out to where it's warm. And then, you know, once everybody's going to the beach and it's crowded, we just enjoy our house. So we try to do everything the opposite of everybody else in life.
Yeah, zig while everyone else is zagging.
Yep.
That's smart. Well, Vince, we kind of just kind of covered like a quick overview of all that you've done. But let's go ahead and kind of jump back to the beginning here. You've talked about basically your slacker days, right? After high school. It seemed like basically you're rudderless. Where did you find yourself post-graduation?
I'm working at a dead end, one of many future dead end jobs that would be coming, dropping out of college a couple of times. I think I dropped out about 5 times. I enjoyed myself. I partied. I had fun with my friends, but I was pretty much going nowhere fast. And it just wasn't, you know, school and the way everybody was telling me it should be wasn't for me. So I was really struggling. I didn't think I was struggling. I thought I was having a good time. Everybody else thought I was struggling until I realized I was.
Vincent, you said you basically 5 times you dropped out of college, but then the 6th time was a charm. Something happened. Like, what was it that you decided to pursue that stuck finally?
Yeah. So for your listener, for about 4 years, I mean, it wasn't just after high school. It was during high school too. It was the last 2 years of high school. It's just, this isn't for me. And I would have rather just worked or done something else. I was heavily into sports as a kid, but I wasn't a great athlete. But so I love sports, but nobody encouraged me. Like, if you weren't playing for the baseball team, you're a dreamer in terms of that's your interest. But I didn't care about math or science, whatever they were teaching me. So I kind of daydreamed and, you know, all these, like, but nobody taught me or told me you can do other things in this field. So I was struggling for a while just doing these different jobs. And then what happened was, and if you read the book, you see, I wasn't morally the greatest person either. I was caught stealing. I was arrested, got thrown in jail. Got in trouble a bunch of times. And at 22, I was moved back in with my parents and was still doing nothing, working at a convenience store. And I woke up in the middle of the night with a nightmare and that I got caught stealing again. And literally 22, sweating. And I went downstairs and I said, what am I doing with my life? It was the first time I really worried about it. Before, it was fine. You know, I'm just enjoying myself. And my dad, who I didn't get along with at that point, as you can imagine, hearing my backstory, he came downstairs and it was really quick and nonchalant. I told him, I said, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. And he got a glass of water and was very descriptive. And he said, well, you like traveling, you like sports, you like taking pictures. I had a point and shoot camera. He goes, why don't you take a photography class? That's what it was. And all I thought about was, you know, I watch sports and these guys on TV and these photographers, like, they're on the field. I was like, wow, that sounds like the dream job. Like that. And I had nothing to lose. Unlike my classmates who went to college and their parents paid all their money for college, I had none of that. So I was like, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to be a sports photographer. And everybody said I was crazy. Everybody said get a real job. But I bought a camera the next day and I started, you know, getting tickets in New York I lived in New York for the cheapest games and snuck down to the front row over time and met the photographers and asked them questions every night and started, you know, learning how to become a photographer. So that's really how it started.
Yeah, you had a sense of resolve for sure. You had something to prove, basically, is what it sounded like too, the way you wrote it out in the book. But also, you worked really hard. So, like, I want to talk some about work ethic.
Yeah,
basically, because there's a big debate about passion and work, right? So, should we follow our passion, do you think, or should we pursue something that tends to be maybe more practical? Mike Rowe, the guy from Dirty Jobs, is down on passion, and he's really high on work ethic. So, like, what's your take on this? Because it seems like passion was an important part of the recipe for you, because with you being so into sports.
It was, but I do struggle with it because, you know, the way it is right now, it's like, oh, follow what you love. And nobody cares about what you're passionate about. I mean, the truth is nobody's going to give you a job because you're passionate about something. I knew nobody cared about my passion. I knew I needed to really work really hard to get noticed and to learn. And I think it's easier now than it was then with the internet. But at that point, I just needed to hustle. I needed to get better. I needed to make connections. I needed to build a network around me. I needed to know what was going on. So yeah, I think you do need to ultimately love what you're doing, but I have a hard time because everybody thinks, well, I want to be a this or I want to be a that. And they have no experience in doing it. Just because you're passionate about it doesn't mean you're going to make money at it. And I do think it's got to be a blend of both of them. But really, the hard work is essential.
Yeah, and I think sometimes if you work hard at something, you can become passionate about it. When you're a kid, you want to be a garbage man. And it sounds so great. And then eventually you decide to go in another direction. There are all sorts of things like passions that fall in and out of our lives. And so it doesn't always have to be at this purest intersection of passion and work ethic. I mean, I think you're right. I think when you do have a passion for something, you got to bring the work ethic hard. Talent alone or interest alone isn't going to cut it.
No, and people forget how long life can be if you do this right. And so what I want you to do, what I want people to do is I'm not concerned about your passion when you're 22 or 25. I want you to become financially able to do what you want to do. So looking back at what I teach people, because this is what I do now, I don't even shoot anymore. Like I teach this to other people. And I want you to get yourself set up so that financially you're in great shape to do what you want to do. The less you need the money, the more you could be bolder in what you wanted to do. And I think people get themselves so stuck in car payments and all this other stuff and just useless spending that they go, well, I have to go to this stupid job because I got all these things I got to pay for. And if your bills were paid for the year and you had money in the bank, you'd probably not go to that job. And whenever I talk to that, people about that, they're like, yeah, what would you be doing? It would be something completely different what they're doing. So financially, not about being as cheap as possible or even the whole FI movement. It's not that. It's about setting yourself up so you have the time and the money to do what you want to do.
Yeah. And so even you, like, your passion has changed, right? For a while, it was getting on the sidelines and shooting the biggest games, and you got to do that. And now that's not what you're into anymore. Like, you found something else, but your financial security has helped you be able to move on to the next passion.
And that was the whole thing. And I was able to even use those stories, like we're talking about today, those stories and those skills to go to the next thing. I always want to be leveling up. I always want to be creating more time freedom, more financial freedom, because the things that I love doing now might be different in 2 years. And in 2 years when that happens, I want to be able to make that shift. And I think people are stuck because they can't, because of the money or I got to go to work. I want, time is very valuable to me. So, you know, when people, even like the online schedules, people want to have a phone call like, oh, how about next Thursday at 4:00? I'm like, well, can we talk now? Because I'm free and I don't really want to take up the middle of the day next week just because that's when your schedule lines up with it. I value time freedom. So time and then not worrying about money is key, because you can invest in the things you want to do and it just gets you there so much quicker. But I think people mess up with money a lot.
Yeah, well, Vincent, I mean, speaking of folks being stuck, right, and having such a large amount of debts, even though when you and your wife were working hard, like this is way back in the day, you guys were also racking up a lot of debt at the time as well, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, in your book, you mentioned how you guys got a mortgage, you got the car payment, you were even doing a home renovation that included building out that custom bar, sounded pretty sweet.
It was.
Basically, you were living the normal American dream, right? But you stumbled upon financial freedom. So for you, like, what caused this shift in your mindset?
It's funny, because even before that, I was very fiscally responsible. Even as a teenager, as crazy as I was, I never wanted a car payment. I never had any credit cards. I paid cash for everything all through my 20s even. So it allowed me to build my photography career, right? It allowed me to not be stuck. It was once we got married and we kind of became American again, and we got the mortgage and we got the car payment and we did all the things you talked about. And all of a sudden, I'm now stuck because I've got to go to work for this company, for this newspaper, because I got all these bills to pay, which I didn't have before. And that, after a year or two, freaked me out because I had never lived like that before. And, you know, you guys are probably familiar with Dave Ramsey. You know, he was like the original with this. And I started listening to him on the radio. I didn't even know who he was. He just sounded like some hillbilly. And I thought it was so smart. And literally came back to my wife. And I was like, we have to do this. And she thought I was crazy. And that's when the idea of, like, we got to get our money together if we're ever going to really be able to live the life that we want. Because I felt trapped.
Yeah. Well, I love what you just said there, Vince. You said you became American again. That's like such an interesting way to put it, because I find that same temptation in my 30s. Like, as I get a little bit older, a little more comfortable, a little more secure, to ramp up my spending, to become a little more American and to not push myself to not try harder things and to not try to save more of my money. And so I think that's probably a normal battle. Like as we get older, maybe our ideals in our 20s, it's easier to live up to those things. It's easier to put off the things that we want and to wait. But then, I don't know, as we get older, it becomes harder, it seems like.
I think it's the culture a lot is, you know, people feel like they don't want to look bad. They don't want to feel like they're not doing well. I think my greatest advantage is I don't care what you think and I'm in no hurry. Like it's the truth. It's, I don't care what you think about my car. I don't care what you think about what we like any of it. But what that's allowed is when people go, how can you leave for 4 months and just travel and rent out an Airbnb a month at a time? Because this is important to us and that stuff isn't. And you have to decide what's important to you and what's not. When people go, I would love to do what you do. Why don't you? Well, I got this job and I got this payment. I'm like, well, work to get rid of it. That's too hard for them to do. So they don't do it. And I say, well, enjoy it, but we're going to enjoy this.
Yeah. Well, so on that note, when you had all that debt, it took some sacrificing in order to get out of that debt, right?
Yep.
So what did you sacrifice in order to achieve that goal of financial freedom? And maybe even before that too, like, I mean, do you want to explain what your definition of financial freedom was?
Yeah, I think it changes, but I think it was just not worrying about money, not needing it. It was to me, okay, I'll tell you what it wasn't. To me, financial freedom wasn't having $2.8 million in the bank, so we lived off of the whatever 4%. That wasn't that. I didn't go by any, you know, financial calculator. It was, I don't want any debt. I want enough money in the bank and I want money coming in at a way that I want it coming in that I can just do what I want to do when I want to do it. And I think this is the thing that gets me. It wasn't a tremendous amount of money. Once we went through it and we started cutting things, we realized we're pretty happy without that much stuff. It was the time that really made us stress, not the lack of money. It was spending 11 hours at a job to make a certain amount of money. It wasn't that we couldn't do things because it wasn't that we couldn't buy things. It's that we didn't have the time to do any of it. That was the big deal for me. So if I can make $100,000 and be completely in control of my schedule, that is way more financial freedom than making 400 grand, but being on the go all the time and not really having the time to do it.
You know, Vincent, they say that the things that you give away, you don't miss them, that you kind of forget about them pretty quickly and yep. They never register again. So when you were cutting things out of your life, was there anything that you were like, oh my gosh, I totally miss that. It's completely changed my life for the worse. Or did you find that the things that you were able to cut out of your life in order to save more money and gain more freedom that you just kind of forgot about them?
We forgot. I mean, not only did we forget about it, but I remember us talking and being like, this is actually kind of nice because what it did, it focused us on what we had as opposed to what we didn't have. And the less decisions we had to make because we just didn't have the money to spend it, there was no discussion, there was no argument. So the money that came in simply went towards paying off debt. And when you have a focus and you have a goal together, it brought us together. Not only did it do that, but it really gave me the incentive to go find other freelance work. It really gave me the incentive to go make more to knock it down quicker. Because what we went from, which was extreme, you know, we were really tight for a couple of years. Then all of a sudden, once the house was paid off and we quit the job and we're making more money in our business than we were in our job, it literally overnight went from tight to not only did we have the money freedom, but we had the time freedom within a week because we did it so methodically like that. So once we quit and there was no more house payment and the money's in the bank and every day I can decide what I want to do, it was that much of a shift. When I feel like I have a purpose, I don't care about the pain. And I didn't feel it. I truly didn't. Looking back, I wish we would have invested in ourselves and our business a little bit more or a lot more because I see what it does for us now. Like we put at least 10% of our income back into personal development now, whether we're doing conferences, masterminds, court, whatever it is, coaches, whatever we're, that's where I'm. And I love that because it expands my network. It expands my knowledge. That wasn't like that in 2007. The world wasn't like that. It's crazy how much different it is now 13 years later. But I mean, looking back, if I had to spend money, it would have been on that. But at that moment, no, I don't feel like we missed out on anything. I know it's a lame answer, but that's just the truth.
No, that's great. I love it. I mean, I guess it kind of clarifies that when you have purpose, when you have purpose and clarity, that it has the ability to make everything else basically not matter. And I think that's an incredible point.
There's just one more point on that. I have a hard time complaining about it. And I really call people out on this as well. When I was in college, I was broke. Like, I worked for the newspaper doing assignments, driving 90 minutes to do shoot football games. You know, this is when I went back to Ohio University when I was a little bit older, 26. I didn't have much money. I was as happy as you could be. I was enjoying myself. I was doing, I didn't need money to make me happy. So every time I started struggling with that, I thought back, when you were in college, you were broke and happy. Why can't you be happy now? And that was a big deal for me to tell myself.
Good stuff, Vincent. All right, so we've got so much more to cover with you, man. We've got a bunch more questions, and we're going to get into some specifics about freelancing and why you think freelancing is such an important thing for people to consider, and kind of some good arguments for why people should be considering it. And we'll get to that right after the break.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach every single summer. We've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry, Betterment is here to help.
Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again.
Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with Vincent Puglisi. His book is Freelance to Freedom. And so, Vincent, let's talk about some of the specific ways. Well, first of all, let's talk about how you came upon freelancing. How did you go from working for a company, right? You're working for your local paper, to taking on freelance gigs yourself?
It was easy for me because I had started in New York as a freelancer. My career started that way. So in the very beginning, I was freelancing for, you know, New York Daily News and Newsday and for the Associated Press. I worked for the World Wrestling Federation for a while, for the National Hockey League. That's how it built up in New York. And then I went back to college in Ohio. And then that's why I was there for 2 years. That's when I met my wife. And then we both got hired. I had won the William Randolph Hearst National Championship. I was like the, I guess, the top college photographer when I won that. So we, that got us both jobs together. So now I was a staff photographer. So I never really wanted to be a staff photographer, but I was kind of coerced, I guess, by the culture of the school. Everybody wanted to get jobs. I'm like, okay, well, that's the way to go. So I kind of followed along, and I knew immediately it wasn't for me. I knew within a month, I'm like, I don't have control of my schedule. And it's been that way for a long time. I didn't have somebody to tell me where to go. So I didn't like it. Everybody else loved it. I didn't. So when we decided to now start our business, which came after a really tough situation, freelancing was kind of easy to me because I kind of remembered it. My wife wasn't as comfortable with it. So I kind of knew how to grind and to get start getting clients. So it wasn't that, it was kind of old hat for me to go back into it, and I was excited by it.
Yeah, and there was a specific annual review that you've mentioned that you had at your work after winning another big time award. And kind of what, how did that annual review go down, and what was, yeah, what was your reaction to it?
Yeah, it's one of those, you know, those days that you never forget. That was one of them for me. And yeah, I just won International Sports Photographer of the Year, which should be a big deal. Like, I was flown to DC to National Geographic for the award ceremony, the whole thing. It was a pretty big deal. And then my annual review came, and this was a month before our first baby was going to be born. So Andrew right now is 14. He was a month from being born. And everybody said, oh, between the awards and your kid coming, that's when everybody, they give you the raise. And I'm making $32,000 a year. So any raise, they're talking about 10%. And I'm drooling at the fact of maybe making $40,000 a year. And I walk into the office, and my boss, who was great guy, helped us out a lot. But he's like, you know, he read down all of my accomplishments for the year, said how amazing I did, how much extra effort I put in. And then he rubbed his eyes and he was like, well, we could only give you 3%. And I stared at him, and he goes, well, you should feel good. Most everybody else is getting nothing. You know, you work so hard, you're getting 3%. And I didn't know what to say. And I remember looking at him, and then I said, you know, I was such a jerk. I was like, well, 3% of your salary is something, but 3% of nothing is still nothing. And he didn't know what to say. And I remember saying to him, no matter how hard I work, no matter how many hours I put in, no matter how many awards I win, and I just stopped myself and I didn't try anymore. And I got up and I went to walk out. I remember standing in his door frame and being like, it's over. So it's like the career that I've been waiting for. I had just photographed the President of the United States. I photographed the Super Bowl 2 years earlier. It was a pretty cool gig, even though I didn't get paid very much money. But I knew it was over because I have a baby coming, and we want to have more kids. And I knew that if I accepted this, I looked out in the newsroom and I noticed how just disappointed everybody was and how much they complained about money and they couldn't do things. And it really just hit me at that moment that I've got to end this. And then I went home. I just left the office and I called my dad to see if I could work for him. He had his own business and I used to work for him, and he turned me down. So even my dad's turning me down now. I'm like, this is really bad. And he said something that changed my life. He said, he goes, I've been telling you this and you haven't listened. He goes, maybe you'll listen now. And he said, but you have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. And that changed my life. I was like, what do you mean? I finally listened to him, and he goes, you could do anything you want. You've become a really good photographer. You could shoot weddings. You could do commercial work. You could do professional sports, but you're settling for $32,000 a year and benefits. And when you hear your dad tell you that you're settling, usually it's the opposite. Usually your parents are telling you to get something safe. He's telling me the opposite. He goes, you're being too safe. So I called my wife. I said, we're starting a business. And she's like, what? And so I went in the phone book, if you remember a phone book, and I called all these different photographers to assist with them. And they all told me no. And I took the phone book, I threw it against the wall. I remember it clearly. And I said, if you can't beat them, join them. I said, well, if you can't join them, we're going to beat them. I said, we're starting a business. And, you know, once you have that drive and that desire to do something, it's hard to stop. And that's really how it all started.
In your book as well, Vincent, you make a really good argument for why more folks should consider freelancing. So can you share some of those reasons why self-employment could be a really smart move?
There's so many. It's first of all, I think everybody should be starting something. I really believe that, because when we were leaving the job and everybody knew where we were going, we saw the business was taking off, and a coworker of mine said, aren't you afraid of the instability? And I looked at her and I said, we have 29 weddings booked for next year. We have a bunch of corporate shoots booked. We can do a whole lot more. And if one person fires me, that's like 5% of our income maybe. If one person fires you, and I pointed to our boss, I said, you're out 100%. I said, you should be more concerned about security. And I know she was like, she wasn't ready for that.
And to freak her out.
Yeah, but you know how many times I talk to people like, they're fine. They don't really want to put the time and effort into it. They don't really want to do the sacrifice. And then they lose their job and they come to me, what do I do? And I said, you got to get a time machine and go back about a year and I can help you. But right now you're going to get another job and it might be a job that you don't want, or now you have to start and you're a little bit too late. So, but you have to get going anyway. But I would always build it before you need it. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to realize.
I mean, that's one of the best arguments for, I mean, you hear the saying of, as far as planting a tree 20 years ago, right? Like that's the best time to have planted a tree. In your situation here, this is a perfect example of that. Getting that started and having that to be able to fall back on is so clutch. In your book as well, you mentioned how in about 10 years or even less than 10 years, a lot of folks are going to be self-employed. Can you share some more thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's funny because even when it's almost turned out to be not true in some ways. When I wrote that, you know, the economy was a little different. It was only a couple of years ago, but the unemployment rate's as low as possible right now, right? It's as low as it's been. So that's kind of, I think it's coming. What I'm finding is so many more people want to do that. Even though they have jobs, I'm getting so many people that come to me like, how do I do the work that I want to do? Even though they have jobs, it's not the job that they want to do. So I ask them, I say, like I said to you earlier, I said, if I paid all your bills for the year and I gave you $100,000 in cash, but you have to work, you have to do something, what would you do? And I can tell you 99 out of 100 of them never say it's what they're doing right now. It's something else that they want to be doing. So I'm like, why aren't you starting to build that right now? Why aren't you making connections? Why aren't you laying the groundwork? And that's where it all starts. You've got to determine what it is you want to do and what it is that you can add value for other people. And then you start building it from there. So even me, every step of the way, I'm evaluating, when do I want to wind this part down or optimize it? And what's the next thing I want to do? So as I'm building my speaking career, now that's my beginning now, but I've got these other things financially to support what we're doing. So I'm always thinking, what is the next thing that I want to grow? So if I want to eliminate this other thing, I'm financially and time-wise ready to do it. So it just keeps stepping up in terms of time freedom each step.
Yeah, I love how you said build it before you need it. Like that's such a good way to think about it. So for folks, they hear what you're talking about. They you know, you've gone out and started your own thing with this, you know, momentous annual review that was just stupefying. And then you're like, you know what? I can do better than this. I can go out and start my own thing. For folks that are listening and they're like, okay, cool. Vincent just said everyone should be building it before they need it. Everyone should start their own thing. What does that look like for someone in a regular 9-to-5 job? Like how do they start to think about starting their own thing?
Yeah, I'm going to backtrack on what I said. I don't know if everybody, some people are born to work for somebody else.
Okay.
And they're going to be what I would consider vulnerable. I don't know if entrepreneurship's for, I think anybody can do it. I don't know if everybody should, because I don't know if that's what they want. But what I find a lot of times is people say, oh, I'd really love to do this thing. And what I talk about is building a bridge. So essentially, like you live on the mainland and the island is where you want to live. It's like the dream situation. And so many people try to go right to the island. I want to start this type of business. No, you have no experience there. You have no connections there. You're probably going to sink on your way there. What I teach to do is to build a bridge. So the bridge often is something that you know very well, something that you do well, but you're not getting paid enough for it. And a lot of times I find it in consulting. People do something like, but can you do a similar thing on your own where it's not for the company that you work for? Like, oh yeah, I can. Or some skill that they already know, can you start making money in that way? Maybe it's not your dream job, but for the next 2-3 years, it's going to give you the time and it's going to give you more money so that when you are able to get out of that job because you've transferred that, now with this thing making the money, now you can really focus on what you want to do. So you need a bridge to get you there. And I think so many people go right to the dream island and then they sink.
Yeah, that's a good point. And when you were starting this too, Vincent, you were taking every dime that you're making from your side hustle, from starting your own photography business on the side, and you're paying that all towards debt. So what you were doing, right, you were securing your own ability to then, as you got your finances in order, to make this your dream job and your full-time thing sooner.
That's exactly right. And even the work that we did, my dream was never to be a wedding photographer. That wasn't my dream. I was not the, oh, I can't wait to do it. I knew I have a skill. My wife has a skill. We make this amount of money doing this type of work. We can transfer this skill into a different part of this profession, make a whole lot more money in a whole lot less time. And then, you know, if we love it, we love it. But then, so that was our bridge. So we went from making $32,000 a year to $8,000 a wedding eventually. Right. And that was 15 years ago, 10 years, whatever. So that Now, instead of working 220 days a year, I'm working 30 days a year. And I'm outsourcing work. And my wife's doing some of the work. And we're making more money. So if I loved it, if it was my dream, I'd still be making six figures easily doing that with very few days working. What happened with wedding photography, it was our bridge to get us there. So once the wedding photography had just blossomed, we had the money, we had the time. Now I've got time to think. That's where when you have, you know, 2 months off, I just kept writing down ideas. And that's where the idea from the book came. So the book came from the time freedom that the wedding photography gave us. And once the book took off, and that led to the masterminds that I run and the membership that I run and the speaking, all that type of stuff, then we were able to slowly and actually quickly just leave the weddings behind and now do this. So we didn't just start doing this. And the weddings too, it was just a transfer of our skills. You have a skill, but you're not using it correctly. Take your skills and use it correctly to do those things.
Very cool. And so, Vincent, to kind of piggyback off of your bridge analogy, so that's assuming that you know you want to get to the island, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what are your thoughts as far as building the bridge before you even know where you want to go? Because I think a lot of times folks might be on the mainland, right? And they just know that they don't necessarily want to be there.
Yep.
And I think sometimes you can start to hone those skills and to do the legwork to start building that bridge before you even know where you want to go. What are your thoughts there?
And this is actually, and you don't even know this, this is leading into the book that I'm writing right now.
Oh, cool.
Perfect segue.
Yeah, because what I learned, the money was the one thing, but the access was the other thing for me, the network that we had built. And this is what I teach so many people on, is building a powerful network. Because when you can, so I would go in this realm of, it's about connections and about relationships. And so many people sit in their cubicle or they sit by themselves and they don't reach out, they don't connect, they don't help other people. And then when they need something, they go, I don't know if you guys have this, you probably do with your podcast, but you never hear from somebody for years. And they go, hey, can you do this for me? And I'm like, yeah, that sounds great, but I haven't heard from you in years. Mm-hmm. Right? I would get this with the photography world. I would shoot all the Steeler games and I would never hear from somebody like, hey, can I be your assistant Sunday for the game against the Patriots? And I'm like, no, yeah, I haven't talked to you. I have all these other people that I'm in touch with. That's my network. They're the ones that are going to get it. And so many people, it's the same thing with build it before you need it. It's the same thing with your network. You need to build a network around you. That's where your opportunities come. Every great thing that has happened in our career, for the most part, has not just come from my hard work. It's come from the people in my network that have opened doors for me. And as that goes on, as the book released and all these people endorsed the book, that came from the network. And then the people sharing and the people that bring other people in, comes from people within the network. And so many people do not focus on building that out. So if you focus on your network, if you focus on helping and connecting people and doing that, when the opportunities arise and when you come up with the idea, you're going to have people behind you supporting you and opening doors for you. But most people walk out there cold with no network and they wonder why they don't get anywhere. So that's a big part of what I believe.
Our friend Jordan Harbinger calls it digging the well before you're thirsty. And
yep.
Yeah, he's been on the show talking about that before. And it's brilliant. You're right. I mean, you have to have those connections. The, you know, the financial security is one thing. And then the relational, that relational clout that you can build as you network amongst your peers is huge too, especially if you're looking about like where you want to build the bridge. Vincent, we've talked a little bit about schooling and you're homeschooling your kids. You guys can travel wherever you want. I'm interested to know, how are you with traditional schools? I mean, I saw a stat recently, almost 50% of college graduates aren't working in a job that requires a college degree. So how are you teaching your kids about an entrepreneurial mindset, like as you're living it?
Well, first of all, I'm kind of trying to brainwash them to not go to college. Too loud. Because I think a lot of ways, unless it's specific that you know what you're going to do, I truly think it's a lot of ways useless and can be a waste of time. And I know people get mad at me for saying that, but I just think like we're teaching them to run their own businesses. Like when we were in Arizona for 3 months, they started a weed pulling business. You know, the three of them made $190 in a Sunday afternoon walking around the neighborhood pulling weeds. And I'm like, you can literally do this and make more money than adults I know if you just did this.
Yeah.
And like I said to you guys, I say to them, you don't have to do this forever. But if you did this enough where you paid a down payment on your house and you have a car paid for and you got cash in the bank and you don't want to do this, then you hire people to do the work that you don't want to do and do the stuff that you're really good at. I just wish this was taught to me. So we're trying to teach it to our kids. And so even just homeschooling, I hate to say it, it's just like to not have them in the indoctrination of the school of saying, here, when the school bus shows up at 7:20, you get on. I'm not going to give you a reason why. You just need to do it. When you go to a class, I don't care if you're working on a brilliant piece of art. When the bell rings, you're going to need to stop doing it and go do something else that you don't want to do. And then the bus will take you home and then you do homework. Like, that's preparing people to be employees, in my opinion. So even just not doing that, they're not going to have the mindset of like, oh, I got to do work that I hate doing just because. Like, they have to work hard, and they have to work hard here. We don't give them money. They have to earn it. But I want them to Seth Godin said this to me. I asked him, I said, you know, we homeschool. What should I be teaching my kids? What shouldn't I be teaching them? And he said only two things: solve interesting problems and lead. If they could do those two things, they're going to be great. Everything else you can memorize. And that really helped shape how we do this.
Hmm. Yeah, man, that's so true. I feel I have a very similar view towards education, right? And like, not just K through 12, but even college and beyond that, right? But like you said, we're teaching our children to not really think about what they're going to do next. They're basically told what to do next. Mm-hmm. And then they get to a certain point, typically, either at, you know, graduating high school or graduating college. And then it's like, okay, do I get a job, or do I continue down the path where people just tell me what to do?
Yep.
And we're not raising our children to think creatively. And yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Obviously, there are going to be some instances where higher education is necessary, right?
Of course.
If you're going to be a doctor, you got to go to school.
Yeah, I want you going to college if you're going to work on...
Right.
I feel like I'm talking to a couple anarchists right now, man.
Well, I mean, it's so true, though, because I think that a lot of entrepreneurs, you do have to kind of have a rebellious mindset a little bit in order to push back against what it takes to be a good employee. And, you know, if you can find ways to creatively teach your children that, man, I'm all for that. And I'm looking forward to my oldest, Vincent, my oldest is only 6. And so I'm looking forward to, as we kind of age up, to be able to incorporate some of those lessons into everyday living, really.
Yeah. I love it. And what I had to learn the hard way was the things that made me a really great entrepreneur made me a terrible employee. And that was really interesting to learn. Like, the mindset that I bring to our business, when I brought that to my boss, he got mad at it because I was kind of either challenging him or upsetting the apple cart or the stat. That's what you're supposed to do as an entrepreneur. You have to think differently and bring new products to market and challenge what's out there. Right? As an employee, you don't. You're not supposed to challenge. You're supposed to follow. And I have a lot of friends that run businesses and they're frustrated because they have kids or young adults coming in to work for them and they don't lead. And they need people to lead them. Like, well, what do you expect? For 16 years, they've been told not to lead. And now you're asking them to lead. And that's a real problem.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. And after that, we're going to talk about some of the specific tips and just advice that Vincent has if you are looking to start your own business, if you're looking to be self-employed. We'll get to those right after the break.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simons on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host. Or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
If you're listening to this podcast right now and you're a small business owner, listen up. Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're actually choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers. They do everything from hyper-targeting best fit prospects through campaign optimization. Upswell Marketing's unique approach includes direct mail, search engine marketing, and social media ads, and has fueled more than 10,000 small business success stories. Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies. Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
Spring cleaning is kind of an annual rite of passage. We've all got to do it, minimize the junk that we have in our house. Emily and I, we just cleaned our closets out. It took hours, but it was so worth it. Now we've only got stuff in there that we love, and it's easier to find everything too. And so, you know, while cleaning your closets is helpful, well, there's something else you can do for your family this spring. Shopping for life insurance with Policy Genius, for example, is a really important part of your financial planning for the year.
That's right. Yeah. And here is the thing that's important to remember, because you might be thinking you don't need to check out Policy Genius because you've got a policy through work. But even if you have a life insurance policy through your job, it may not offer you enough protection for your family's needs, and it may not follow you if you leave your job. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius works for you, not the insurance companies, and that means they don't have an incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance.
Save time and money and provide your family with a financial safety net using Policy Genius. Head to PolicyGenius.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's PolicyGenius.com.
All right, we're back from the break. We're talking with Vincent Puglisi. And Vincent, thanks again so much for joining us. This has already been a great conversation. But we've got to get to some practical tips for folks who want to get started, who want to start freelancing their way to freedom. They want to start their own thing. So we talked about how important self-employment is when it comes to gaining control of our money, right? That in actuality, if we get fired by one person, we still have income from a bunch of other people, which is great. What are some of the other practical takeaways that you would suggest for our listeners who are excited to start their own side hustle or business?
Yeah, I love to go to case studies of certain examples. I don't want to give a blanket statement because everybody's a little bit different in this. One thing I want to bring up that nobody talks about, or very few people talk about, and they don't talk about in school, is taxes. And I know it sounds like a boring topic, but it's not, because what I learned, and I don't know if you guys have read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Have you guys read that book?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There was a chapter in that book that changed my life towards being an employee versus an entrepreneur. And it basically said, when you're an employee, you make money, you're taxed on it, and then you get the rest. And when you're an entrepreneur, you make money, you spend it on any way that sees fit in your business, including travel, if it has to do, or personal development, and then you pay taxes on the rest. And when I read that, I literally hit my book against my head. And I was like, that was, I remember at that year, 2005, I was like, that's $20,000. Different that I would have in my pocket if I would have been self-employed as opposed to being an employee. And so the tax advantages between health insurance, there are the laws are written by business owners. And I want people to understand that. They're written to help business owners, not to help employees. And I think people think because the school system pushes that way, that it's safer to be an employee. But financially, you will keep more of your money being self-employed than you will as an employee. So that's just a little soapbox rant about that.
Well, I mean, coming up on tax season, that's an important consideration for sure. For somebody who maybe they know that they want to start something, but they kind of don't know in what direction they want to go. Yep. What advice would you have for them?
What I love, you know, and Seth Godin talked about this in his latest book, This Is Marketing, is the smallest viable audience. I'm going to piggyback off of that because I think people think it needs to be huge and it needs to be big. What you need to do, if you read Kevin Kelly's 1,000 True Fans, you need to create raving fans, whether it's small or big. And I think so many people think in terms of, oh, how do I get it to replace my income? And I think that's the wrong thing to think. I think when you realize the tax advantages of self-employment, you don't need as much. If you have a traditional job making $80,000, you're being taxed on a lot of that. If you get rid of a lot of those expenses that you have that you think that you need with that, you don't need as much money as you believe often, you can live on a little bit less. And when you can take something that you're good at and get raving fans from it, even if it's a small amount, with us, it was photography. We had a small group of people. The thing that I want people to take away from this is it's not, I mean, social media is great. I love it. But 87% of jobs come from referrals. And I think this is the big takeaway for me. If you can create raving fans on a small level, people that love what you do, and they spread the word about it, that's how businesses spread. It's not what's sold, but it's the truth. 87% come from referrals. So we never really advertised. What we said was, we're going to do the best we can for the smallest amount of people possible. We weren't trying to satisfy everybody. We knew what our niche was in terms of photography. We knew it was going to be a photojournalistic style. That's what we just take what you do best and do it for a small group of people, because those people raved about us. We had one client in our first year that, and we didn't know anything about business. So this is where a lot of people are at, but we did exactly what they were hoping for. They told their friends everything we were doing. We booked 7 brides from that one bride, and we gave her a free album from it. That literally jump-started our entire photography business. So when you get the right people that spread the word around you on what you do, you can exponentially grow your business just from that without anything else.
That's a good point. Yeah, and I love what you said, that one person, right, that one gig yep. could help spread the fire of helping you find other great gigs. What about folks, Vincent, that have maybe like a fledgling side hustle right now? They've got a business that they're doing on the side, and they don't know how to get it ramped up. What are the first steps to kind of growing that business that they've started, but maybe haven't put enough into yet?
Well, they got to figure out they really want to be doing it, because there's other people that are doing it. I will say this to that person. There is somebody that is going to start that same business tomorrow that will be making more money than them in a year, because somebody else has more energy to put towards it.
Yeah.
So whenever I hear that kind of situation, it generally is they're generally not putting in the effort and the fire to make it work. If your kid's life depended on it, could you make this business into a 6-figure business by next year? I hope you're going to say yes.
Right, right.
You're going to find out how to do it. So that's where it comes from. How much energy and attention are you going to put into it? Are you going to work on that business when you get home, or are you going to scroll the internet? Whatever business it is, you know, say it's, you know, making wedding dresses. Are you going to connect with other people that make those dresses or that are make accessories to it? Are you going to go to those conferences? Are you going to connect them with somebody else that needs what they do? You could do it with any business. It's how energetic and how, I guess you would say, passionate are you about growing it? Because somebody's going to do it. It's not the economy. Are you going to put in the work to do it? That's going to piss some people off. I get it. And that's fine. But that's what I see. It's the effort that people put in from the very beginning that you guys asked me, in terms of like what kind of energy you put into it. That's where it comes from. Are you willing to do the different things that your competitors aren't doing to make it successful?
Hmm. Yeah, to make you stand out for sure. Well, Vincent, you know, you're mentioning your children. You've written also just how the time that you have with them left while they still are living at home, how that's so valuable to you. You mentioned your book, how like you're not going to forego building some Legos or, you know, going out and playing some wiffle ball. So what if there's someone who is in a similar life stage as you and, you know, they have the same values, but they haven't yet built that side business and they're not in control of their money currently? Do you have any advice for them?
Yeah, it's everything we've been talking about for the last 45 minutes. It's all that stuff right there. It's like, I know maybe they're starting later than we did, but we were very fortunate to be able to find that early on. But you still have the time now to do it. And even if they're out of the house now, we always look 10 years ahead. What do we want life to look like? And then when we were broke, we said that, you know, Andrew was little and we were like, I want freedom. That was the number one word. I want to not worry about money. And I want to be able to travel with our kids. They're not going to remember traveling when they're little. So I want when they're 10 and 12 to be able to do this stuff. And right now we're looking at 10 years from now, what do we want life to look like? Well, we're anticipating that each of them are going to live in a different part of the country. Now, I don't want that to be, but they can. One might, or a different part of the world, right? I don't want them all to say, well, we live here, so you better live here, and we're going to have family tension like that. If they want to go live in wherever, my job as a parent is to build a life that I can go visit them when I want. I can, you know, if they have kids, that I make it so I go to them, and I'm not putting the burden. Like, I'm always thinking, what is life going to look like in 10 years? And every day is working towards that life. And I'm never going to get there because in 10 years, it'll be another 10 years. Same thing for them. They could be starting out right now. How are they building the life that they want for the future? And I think when people get into short-term desperation mode, like I need this now, that's when they always struggle. That's when they're always struggling.
Vincent, man, this has been a great wide-ranging conversation. I feel like so much good information out there for our listeners. So thank you so much for joining us. And I want to give you a chance. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Two things. My favorite thing right now in the world that I'm doing is I started a podcast. It's a daily podcast. It's 5-6 minutes. There's, you know, it's a very simple. There's not even an intro. There's not an intro or an outro. It's just quick hits. I do that every day. It's Total Life Freedom Podcast. And then also, if any of your listeners want the book, I recorded the audio book of Freelance to Freedom. I give it away for free. So if anybody wants it, totallifefreedom.com/F2F book, they can download the book for free. And that's theirs.
Dude, that's awesome. All right. Well, we'll definitely post a link to that in our show notes for sure. I know that there'll be a lot of people heading over there to check that out after they hear this interview. So, Vincent, thanks again so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. I totally appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you, Vincent.
All right, Matt. That was a great conversation with Vincent. I mean, so much to talk about when we're talking about freelancing and freedom and, like, man, just how to get there. And so I think, yeah, Vincent had a great story, but also just some really good tips as well for folks who do want to start their own thing. So I want to know from you, what's your big takeaway from our conversation with Vincent?
Well, I've got two of them, and I've done this before, so I'm only going to say one of them, and I'll let you then do yours.
Just go ahead, do both.
Just in case.
Take your time.
Don't want to steal yours. But one of the things he said is that when I have purpose, I don't mind the pain. And oh my gosh, dude, that is so true, not only for me, but I think that's true for a lot of people. I think there are lots of areas in our life where we can see something that we know we want to achieve, right? Whether it be a new position or whether it be something like working out. Like I think about running and training for a race. You know what sucks? Waking up really early and running in the cold. But when you know you're trying to achieve something, when you know you're trying to, you know, set a new personal record, and even when you're running, the pain doesn't matter because you know you have a goal set before you.
Makes me think of our last interview with 5 a.m. Joel, and he's like, his friend told him, you know what?
Yeah.
Waking up early is going to be really, really hard, but it's going to be one of the most gratifying things you've ever done. It's like no pain, no gain.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, if you've identified what it is that you're seeking after.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is something Vincent said. Basically, find your purpose. Once you can find your purpose, and then everything else will fall into place. It'll be a lot easier.
All right. Number two, go for it. I'm going to let you go two in a row.
Okay. Back to back.
Yeah. Make it happen.
Well, the other thing he mentioned too was how if you're going to be a good entrepreneur, you're probably going to be a not good employee, right? And vice versa. If you're going to be a great employee, you're probably not going to make the best entrepreneur. And man, that completely struck a chord with me as well there, because I think back to when I took my first and only professional job post-college. I'll say I was an okay employee, but only for a little bit. 6 months into it, I was a bad employee because I was constantly asking questions. When there were inefficiencies that didn't make sense to me, I had a tough time just obeying orders and doing what I was supposed to do. And so it kind of explains why for over 10 years now, I've been self-employed. I think sometimes it takes someone who's a little bit rebellious at heart, unfortunately, right? And for those who aren't necessarily rebellious or stubborn or hard-headed like I was, it sometimes can take a podcast or reading a book that can kind of get you thinking in that direction. And so, man, hopefully this interview, hopefully Vincent's book, all these things will cause a lot of folks out there to kind of start thinking down the path towards freelancing to maybe consider starting their own business.
Yeah. And I love being able to kind of straddle both worlds for a while. I mean, that's kind of what we've been doing, launching the podcast. And that's what so many people can do. They can start something, they can give it a shot, you know, while they've got their day job. And, you know, like Vincent, what he did, he funneled all that extra money towards his debt. It was his beautiful thing where he's starting his side hustle, he's paying down debt, he's setting himself up so much more quickly as opposed to spending that extra income towards actually achieving this freedom and then this new career that he was setting out to do.
Yeah, so true, man. And I think that's the position that a lot of people are going to be in, where they are straddling both while they are figuring things out, you know, while they're in the process of building that bridge to that island.
And while they're getting their finances in order, because that is such a huge part of the equation. Like, you have to be cutting back. You have to be better with your personal finances, first off, in order to kind of have that margin to feel comfortable launching out there and starting your own thing.
Absolutely, dude. All right. So for you, what was your big takeaway?
Man, it was kind of actually this small thing that Vincent mentioned. And he talked about how this singular goal of paying off their debt and starting this business together, how it really actually brought he and his wife together.
Oh, yeah.
I thought that was really interesting and actually really true, that sometimes if you continue going on in the status quo, the way things are, well, nothing's going to change with your money. Nothing's going to change with the way you relate to your significant other or your friends. And sometimes doing something hard, sometimes tackling something and moving really intentionally in a specific direction can actually show that there's a lot of strength in some of those relationships of the people that you're closest to. And so I thought that was just fascinating that he said it was good for he and his wife to do these hard things together. And I feel like maybe sometimes my relationship with Emily, it's at its worst when I'm at my laziest, when we're not being intentional about the way we're spending our time, when we're not trying to reclaim something together. And so, yeah, it makes me want to be intentional about how we're talking about our money, how we're talking about our goals, how we're talking about the future together, because it is good for our relationship. So, yeah, I thought that was just kind of this interesting insight that Vincent brought during our conversation.
Yeah, man. It's fun to build something with your best buddy, but it's even more fun to do that with your spouse.
Yeah, no doubt.
All right, man. What do you think of the beer we had on this episode? Again, we had S'mores Yeti, which is an Imperial Stout from Great Divide.
Yeah, I really like this one, man. You know, just the other day, I had a big limb fall in my backyard. I sawed it up. I made a little outdoor fire. My whole fam and I, we roasted hot dogs and s'mores over the fire.
A little mountain man.
I know, right? Yeah. So it was a lot of fun, but we made s'mores, right? And it's got this the chocolate, the graham cracker, the marshmallow. This beer totally reminds me of that night, that super fun night that we had as a family. It was a great beer. I'm never disappointed by any of the Yeti variants that Great Divide puts out.
So good.
And this one was great. I think with the Mexican chocolate Yeti, I said it reminded me of a campfire.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And this time I actually did a campfire, so all right.
This is the real s'more beer.
So I can make the analogy again.
Yeah, all right. Well, yeah, so the chocolate, that was there for me. And it even had some of the kind of warming spices a little bit that you get out of sort of a more of a winter ale. I was totally picking up on some of those notes, less on the sort of creamy marshmallowness to it. But the chocolate all the way, it kind of reminded me of a Yoo-hoo, you know, like the kids' chocolate drink.
Yeah.
Except for the adult beer variation. So I'm glad to be sharing this one with you, buddy. Glad we've had several beers here now from Great Divide. And thanks again to all of our friends over there at the brewery for sending these our way.
Yeah. And so for folks that want more information about Vincent, want the link to get that ebook, you can go to our website at howtomoney.com and you'll see the show notes up for this episode.
That's right. And if you found this episode helpful, we would love if you left us a review over at Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts. If you have not yet subscribed, that's really important as well. Make sure you hit that button so that you get all of our latest episodes this year. All right, Joel, that's going to be it for this episode. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elliot Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross.
Tiffany Cross.
Join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. We gather a seasoned elder, myself as the middle generation, and a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations. Prepare to engage or hear perspectives that literally no one else has had. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.